Penguin Random House Audio presents Better, How I Let Go of Control, Held On to Hope, and Found Joy in My Darkest Hour by Amy Robach. Read for you by the author.
Introduction. A Beautiful Connection. My older daughter Ava was 10 when I told her I had cancer. As she struggled to understand what was happening to me, she put her feelings down on paper and wrote a poem, but then hid it, too embarrassed to let me see her words. Instead, she showed it to a dear friend and colleague of mine, Sarah Haynes. Sarah and I first met and worked together at NBC, and now we're lucky enough to work side by side at ABC. We've shared a lot of ups and downs over the years, and she's become like a sister to me and an aunt to my daughters. Sarah encouraged Ava to give me the poem. She said, "Your mom needs to read this," and she was right. Ava ran up to me one evening in the middle of my chemo treatments and handed me the neatly folded sheet of lined paper. "Mom, please don't read this in front of me," she said as she hurried off to her bedroom and closed the door. As I began to read Ava's words, I was overcome with pride. My little girl had so much compassion in her beautiful heart. Her empathy and optimism leapt off the paper. The title of the poem was perfect, simple, and powerful. Better. What a hopeful word. It stared back at me at a time when I felt the opposite. I was weak, but my daughter knew that I would be strong again. My tears started flowing. The voice of my 10-year-old astounded me as I marveled at her incredible wisdom. Her poem was a message of understanding and encouragement from daughter to mother. Better by Ava McIntosh. As she walks through the door with her head held up high and a sparkle in those big blue eyes, that smile is contagious, and I don't know why. This is her battle, yet she strengthens me. This is her struggle, and she can't be free. This is her worry, but I have no doubt she will survive without one pout. She will be strong, stronger than ever. She's a fighter, just like her daughter. It has to get worse before it gets better, and trust me, it will get better. My younger daughter, Annalise, was only 7 when she had to hear that her mommy had cancer. She spoke to me through her art, drawing me as a princess, as if to make me all-powerful. But at the same time, I noticed how she held on to me a little tighter than before, and I could see in her big brown eyes how much she needed me. My daughters made me rise up in my darkest moments. I felt stronger, better, just knowing they believed I could conquer this horrible disease. I've come to recognize that there is no clearer mirror in the world than the reflection of yourself through your children. Despite the fact that millions of women share this awful illness, cancer can feel very isolating. I've found over this past year that every time I share my story, other women share theirs, and a beautiful connection is made. It's been a tremendous source of comfort for me, and it's the reason I decided to write this book. As a journalist, I'm much more interested in telling the story than in being the story. But the fact is, I didn't really have a choice about going public with my illness. I was tested on live television as a public service, and keeping quiet about the rest of my experience just felt wrong. My passion for journalism is rooted in the notion that by providing information, we become stronger, more connected people. My goal is to share not only the daily challenges I faced as a newly diagnosed cancer patient, but also the evolution that occurred as I transitioned from patient to survivor to thriver. I am a different woman than I was before cancer. I am a better mother, wife, daughter, sister, and friend, and I've learned so much about myself. Perhaps the biggest lesson was one that I thought I knew, yet too often forgot. The truth is, all I really need is exactly what I have right now. Chapter 1. You want me to do what? I've never been a big believer in fate. Too many awful things happen to too many wonderful people for me to accept that there's a larger plan for the greater good. But that said, I have to admit the events that led to my diagnosis all felt very fated. I have so many reflections that begin with what if, and thank God. What if I had stayed at my previous job at NBC and never switched to ABC? Thank God I jumped networks. What if I hadn't become a larger part of the Good Morning America family, which happened only because of an unexpected twist in GMA host Robin Roberts' second cancer battle? I'd filled in for Robin every other week for nearly a year while she was on leave for a bone marrow transplant to fight myelodysplastic syndrome. Thank God I was the one who got to step in. If these things hadn't happened, I might never have received the email that ultimately saved my life. It was late September 2013. I was in the rural Pennsylvania home of Marie Monville, a sweet, pretty young mother of three whose husband had walked into a quiet Amish schoolhouse 7 years earlier and gunned down 10 little girls, killing five of them, and then himself. Marie had written a memoir about her life before and after the shooting, and we were about to do her first network television interview for ABC News. She had remarried, but she still lived in Amish country. My producer, Caitlin Fulmer, and I had driven out the night before and stayed at the Hotel Hershey, a few miles from Caitlin's childhood home. It's stunningly beautiful country, with horse-drawn carriages and pastoral farms, the last place you'd expect to find such a tragedy. On the morning of the interview, I was still fine-tuning my questions and follow-ups as the crew finalized their camera positions and lighting. They placed Marie in front of the stone fireplace, and when I saw her there, I was struck by how incongruous it all seemed. This poised young woman in this pleasant house in bucolic middle America had gone through a hell I couldn't begin to understand. We were about to start rolling when I glanced at my cell phone and saw a cryptic message from Good Morning America producer Sandra Aiken. "Can you call me? I have a delicate assignment I need to talk to you about." Standing in Marie Monville's kitchen, I dialed into what we call the GMA RIM. And when I was transferred to Sandra, she seemed just the slightest bit flustered. "We're going big for breast cancer awareness next month," she said. "We're going to go pink in a major way, and we want to show women having live mammograms in our mammavan in Times Square." She paused. "We'd also like to have a member of our GMA team participate, and we'd like you to be that anchor." My reaction was visceral. No way, no how, never gonna happen, I thought. I knew that on-air medical screenings by members of the media, like Katie Couric's colonoscopy on the Today Show in 2000, raised awareness and saved lives. But Katie had a personal connection to colon cancer. Her husband, Jay Monahan, had succumbed to the disease, and she wanted to demystify a life-saving test that many people avoid because it's scary and uncomfortable. This was different. I've always prided myself on authenticity in my work, and this wasn't a genuine personal cause for me. "Sandra, I don't think this is something I'm prepared to do," I said. "I've never had a mammogram before, so to have my first in front of millions of people isn't ideal." "I understand completely," she said. "Let's talk about it when you get back to the city. Can you hold off on a decision until then?" I agreed to that much, but nothing more. The interview was as intense and emotional as I'd imagined it would be. Just a few years earlier, Marie had enjoyed what must have looked like a perfect life, with beautiful children and a loving husband. But then she had a miscarriage, which seemed to affect her husband even more than it did her. He blamed God, and so he decided to take it out on God's people, the Amish. She told us about the day he made a special effort to run out to the bus stop to say goodbye and "I love you" to their children. Only later would she realize why. This was the morning he had planned to execute his rampage. He had already purchased the ammunition and the rope to tie up his victims. After reliving all this with Marie, I was glad to have the 3-hour drive back to the city to decompress. Thinking about those schoolgirls made me want to run home to mine. I was once again reminded how lucky I was to have my family, my life, and my job, which is when I remembered Sandra's call. As Caitlin drove, I called my husband and my mom and talked it out with them. My main concern was that it might be seen as exploitative or stuntish. I was afraid I would take heat from my colleagues and other media outlets for being part of a story that didn't feel like it had much to do with me. I also imagined how vulnerable I would feel with millions of people watching me do something every other woman on the planet does only in the privacy of her doctor's office. I didn't want to expose myself, literally or figuratively. They both agreed that having a mammogram on live TV was probably not a good idea. Then I decided to call my longtime agent and friend, Henry.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?